There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So this week we have a familiar face in the studio. He's familiar to the festival. He's been a moderator, I think, last year. And were you a moderator the year before that as well?
I was, yeah.
See, we just can't get rid of you, can we?
I know.
He's moderator for the upcoming Emirates Airline Festival of Literature as well, which is happening from the 1st to the 10th of March. Make sure that's in your calendars. Don't let it creep up on you unawares. And I'm going to embarrass you a little bit, Rehan, by introducing you properly as well. So you're the author of the fantasy series The Tazbarai Chronicles, and your day job means that you are the regional consulting and innovation director in the Middle East and North Africa region for a FTSE 100 corporation, which is a little bit different.
It is.
Well, you need to put bread on the table for the family somehow, right? So come on.
So you've got more than 20 years of experience. You've worked across a number of industries, including telecoms, media, technology, etc. But I really want to talk about the Tazbarai Chronicles very briefly, because you've got some really exciting news, haven't you?
Well, the Tazbarai Chronicles are sort of book two is complete. It's a young adult fantasy series. But also, I've just started working on historical fiction right now, which is sort of set in the 16th century, the Tudor period for those from England. But in Europe and in Asia, there are wonderful things going on with the Ottoman Turks, the Safavids in Persia, as well as the Moroccans as well. So it's kind of set in that period. And I've got a publisher's deadline to finish by the end of February, so I can probably come back and tell you more about that later on.
That sounds amazing. Congrats.
Mm. You know, you actually have a fan in the studio.
Oh, wow. Great.
So man has actually read your book.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I've read I have, so
I thought that was a nice little bit of coincidence, because he didn't realize that you were coming on and he'd actually already read your book. So speaking of books, you're on a desert island now. You've only got three books with you, because I'm really mean. You do have five that you were thinking of, but we're going to focus on your three. Which ones didn't make it to the list?
It's always hard to narrow them down, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, the two that didn't make it, one was called City of Jinns by William Dalrymple, and it's a history of Delhi across kind of five epochs, and he looks at the period of the partition, the Indian mutiny, the Mughal period, the Tughlaq period, and also the ancient Vedic period, and that didn't quite make it. It's a fantastic travel book, and he's coming to the festival this year. Yep. The other book that didn't make it was one by Michael Crichton. Now, you'll probably know Michael Crichton for Jurassic Park, but the book I chose was Eaters of the Dead, which is a book about a 9th century Arab diplomat called Ahmad ibn Fadlan, who had adventures with the Vikings in the north. And it's based on a true story. So there was a man called Ahmad ibn Fadlan who was sent to north. And then so Michael Crichton took that book, took the real treatise of the diary, the journal, and then fantasized it. They made a really bad Antonio Banderas movie.
Oh, really?
In the, I think, 90s, called The 13th Warrior.
Oh, of course. Yeah. How is that based on his
book?
Yeah,
but so read the book, don't watch the movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's always kind of the general rule anyway on talking of books. But your first book that you're going to talk about is very different to Michael Crichton. It is, tell us what it is.
Okay, so I chose The 40 Rules of Love by Elif Shafak. And if I was on a desert island, what the mood I'd want to conjure up would be one of compassion and one of love. Because if I'm going to survive on an island, I need to feel part of it. Mm. I need to nurture it. I need to, you know, love it. If I go trying around breaking things, I'm not going to survive very long, right? So I chose that book so that it would evoke in me a certain kind of mood. Okay, now the book itself is about the poet Rumi, who lived in the 13th century, and it kind of captures a moment in Rumi's life when he meets a wandering dervish called Shams of Tabriz, and it transforms Rumi's life totally. So Rumi is this, you know, credible scholar, he's highly recognized, and then he becomes this poet after meeting Shams, and his life is transformed. So that's kind of the essence of the book, but what Elif Shafak does really well is that the story starts in modern day US, and it starts with a woman called Ella, who is going through some kind of marital problems, and she's a literary agent. She's given this script, which is about this book, about these two people from the 13th century, and as she's reading it, she starts to explore various aspects of love and what does that mean for her and so on. So that's kind of roughly what it is, yeah. Mm.
So these two stories happen simultaneously.
Yeah, so what you're doing, it's written in the first person. So you're flicking between the points of view of Ella and then going back to Rumi, to Shams, and then the cast of characters that are kind of circumambulating around these kind of, you know, inspirational figures.
What's really interesting about Elif Shafak and the way she wrote that book as well is because she's Turkish, but she grew up everywhere in France and London and the US. Yeah, yeah. And she really talks a lot about the fact that growing up in a very multicultural society allowed her to take a lot of the different myths and storytelling techniques into her own writing. And I think especially in The 40 Rules of Love, you see this idea of like the 1001 Nights, where we've talked about before, there's a story in a story in a story, which is sort of what she does, being the main character, being a literary agent who's reading a novel by an unknown writer about the poet Rumi. So she does that technique quite well.
Sometimes when you have those books where it's, like you say, a story within a story, like Nesting Dolls, sometimes it can be a little bit dizzying and it can kind of leave you off kilter as you're reading the book. But you don't feel that way with this. She handles it well.
I think she's a great writer. She's very clear and concise, but also very descriptive. Even if you're not too into the plot, I just love reading her writing.
Yeah, I mean, it's very kind of, I think she presents a very non-judgmental view on people. So even the characters that she has around her. And I saw her speak live once when I was at the Bradford Literature Festival. And, you know, one of the things she said was that when you read a novel, it's a very personal moment. And in that moment, when you're very close to the characters, you can really engender compassion and empathy because you're reading about people who are different to you. Okay. And that comes across in her books. And so when she talks about the 40 rules of love, so the character Shams of Tabriz, who's this kind of, you know, dervish who comes into Rumi's life and transforms him, he has these 40 rules which he lives by. And I'd like to quote one of the rules if
Please.
I can. And there are 40, so you can look them up yourself. But let me just read one. He says, "How we see God is a direct reflection of how we see ourselves. If God brings to mind mostly fear and blame, it means there is too much fear and blame welled inside of us. If we see God as full of love and compassion, so are we." And there are these wonderful kind of like couplets of like semi-poetry that run throughout the book at various times that you get them.
Perfect choice for a desert island.
And by the way, if you guys want to hear Elif Shafak talk, she has an amazing talk called The Politics of Fiction on TED Talks.
Okay.
So
yes.
You guys should probably listen to that if you want to hear her talk.
And if you've just tuned in, remember you're listening to Dubai Eye on 103.8. I'm Annabelle Corton and co-hosting with me is Man Jalal. And we're talking to Rehan Khan about his desert island reads for Castaway, because we've been really mean and we've stranded him on a desert island with only three books to keep him company. And the first book he's talking to us about is The 40 Rules of Love by Elif Shafak. And I'm so glad you chose to talk about this, because it's one of those books that I've heard so much about, and I've known the title and the author and absolutely nothing else, and nothing has made me really want to read it except for your quotes just now and everything that you've said about it. So thanks for the recommendation. Like, I needed more books to read.
Yeah.
Who would you recommend it to?
Well, look, I think there's obviously, you could preach to the choir and you could talk to, you know, recommend it to people who are already interested in compassion and in mindfulness and so on. But what I'd also suggest, if you as an individual out there are feeling particularly maybe a little bit mean and dispirited and you haven't been treating people very well, and we all know that happens, right? It happens to all of us. If you feel that, take a look at this book, because it'll really soften your heart. It'll really make you feel very compassionate towards others. So I think I would recommend it for anyone who's feeling a little bit down as well.
It's a good way to start the new year.
And it's a good way to get introduced into Rumi. I mean, you know, I love Rumi. So I think it's a great way, if you've heard of Rumi, you're not sure what he's about, this is a great way to get your Rumi dose.
No, we had no idea on Talking of Books that you like Rumi. You've never mentioned it
never,
before.
Never, ever.
No, he's actually done an entire segment all about Rumi.
Oh,
15 minutes where he just talks.
So, did you read Rumi's poetry?
I read Rumi's poetry. I've read this book. I've read every book about Rumi. Rumi's Daughter is a very good book as well, fiction.
Yeah.
But this one is one of the best, because it really goes into his relationship with Shams al-Tabriz, which not many books do. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's your first book. You have two more that you have to talk to us about. The next one, do you want to give us a little teaser as to what it might be about without giving the title away or the author? A little bit tricky.
It's a book which, whenever I mention it to someone, everyone says it transformed their life.
Oh, that's a good way of leaving it.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
We are talking about three books that our Castaway island person.
Palstoy Island person.
Rohan here. So we just talked about Elif Shafak's book, The 40 Rules of Love, and you were going to tell us, read us another really good quote from the book, yeah?
Yeah, I was, because I thought it would be quite nice just to get the actual voice of the character. So we were talking about Rumi, and this is the moment Rumi has met Shams of Tabriz. And just after that, he says, and just if I can just set this up, which is that every single chapter of the book starts with letter B. Because when you look at the essence of the Quran, the Holy Book, the essence of the Quran is the first chapter, Al-Fatiha, the opening. And the essence of the first chapter is the first word, Bismillah. Mm-hmm. So Shafak used that, and every single chapter starts with B. So this one starts with B as well. So Rumi says, "Bountiful is your life, full and complete, or so you think, until someone comes along and makes you realize what you have been missing all this time, like a mirror that reflects what is absent rather than present. He shows you the void in your soul, the void you have resisted seeing. That person can be a lover, a friend, or a spiritual master. Sometimes it can be a child to look after. What matters is to find the soul that will complete yours. All the prophets have given the same advice. Find the one who will be your mirror. For me, that mirror is Shams of Tabriz."
Oh, that's really good. I think it really reflects a lot about his relationship with Shams throughout the book.
And just the voice within. Just wanted to give people a bit of a snippet what the book sounds like.
Oh, thank you so much. I really do love it when people actually read from the books that they are passionate about, because it's so much better coming from you. It really comes across. So that's the first book that you've taken to your desert island. And you've teased the next one as something that will transform our lives if we read it. So, you know, the pressure is on for this book to perform. So,
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
What is it, Rehan?
Okay, so it's the autobiography of Malcolm X. And it's a book which, if I was on a desert island, I would read this because it would help me value my time. You know, how I use my time on desert island, not to waste it. And I read this book when I was 21, I think that was 1992, a long time ago. And once I read it, I realized that I came to a realization that every single step that we take in life is one step closer to our death. Now, that shouldn't sound morbid, but what it does is that it gives you a sense of urgency to use all the moments that you have today effectively, you know, to spend time with the people that you love, to do the things that you wanted to do, and not to, you know, waste your time.
It's really funny you should mention that, because we just had a text come in, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly, but from Haney, who says, "Nice show ender, guys, listening while doing the gym." So hopefully she's making her time count, and you're helping with that.
Fantastic, fantastic. So I think that particular book did that for me. It really transformed how I use my time what I filled it with, really. And so the book is about the civil rights and human rights leader from the 1960s, Malcolm X. And it's written with Alex Haley, who obviously people know because he wrote Roots and various other books. And it really covers kind of five periods of Malcolm's life. So we have the period initially when he's growing up, and his father is killed by white supremacists, and his mother goes into a mental institution, and we just see that kind of unfolding in the young boy. We then and he grows up in Michigan. We then join him a little bit later in his life when he's a teenager in Boston and in New York, getting involved in crime, getting involved in organized crime, and then eventually ending up in prison with a 10-year jail sentence. He then spends about 6.5 years in jail, and then the third part of his life starts, which is he joins a black supremacist movement called the Nation of Islam, and he converts and he joins them. When he comes out, he, over a period of about 10 years, goes through the ranks of the Nation and becomes their national spokesman, a real firebrand. Now, Nation of Islam was, what Malcolm realized then around 1964, he'd been growing very despondent with the way the Nation was preaching, because it was preaching very much hatred and division. And he realized that we are essentially, as a Nation of Islam, are just like the Ku Klux Klan. they're white supremacists, we're black supremacists. This is not the way to, you know, solve our problems. So he goes on a pilgrimage to Makkah in 1964 and then converts to Orthodox Sunni Islam, comes back, is, you know, kicked out of the nation, and then really becomes the individual that everyone loves. You know, this compassionate leader who tried to bring people together. And then this is the last part of his life is, I think most of your listeners will know that he was assassinated by some kind of members of the Nation of Islam. That's what's expected. That's what is suspected in 1965. But he leaves an amazing legacy. I mean, you know, from people like Muhammad Ali, who converted to Orthodox Sunni Islam at the time, to, you know, many, many others. So the book covers that period. And he was killed when he was 40. And as soon as you pick up the book, you're in his voice, and the clock is just ticking. You know that this man is going to get killed, you know, and his life is just filled with trying to get stuff done. So that urgency, that really kind of struck me, and that's why I said it transformed me. And I think, you know, Man, you've read it, maybe, yeah, you know, you can share your experience.
Yeah, I read it in my late teens, mid-teens, and it was, I love Alex Haley, the writer of this book, because through reading Roots, it was the first time I read about the Muslim experience in literature. And I think with the autobiography of Malcolm X, I experienced something similar, because I had not read many books about Muslim figures in a quote-unquote contemporary frame. And Malcolm X's story, I think, not only gives you a snippet about a man who becomes a Muslim, but also about that time period in the United States. I remember very specifically, you know, him with the different hairstyles, him trying on different clothes and trying to blend in with people, and just learning a lot about American history, which is ironically quite relevant today and what's happening in the social climate in the States today. So for me, specifically reading this book, it changed me, because I wasn't thinking about it so much in the same terms you were, but I was just in awe of how determined this person was to change the world, to change his people, and the effects that his legacy had after, not only with people like Muhammad Ali, but even with Martin Luther King. Okay. Their legacies, you know, are very interwoven. And I think there wouldn't have been a lot of change in the States during the time if it wasn't for people like Malcolm X, yeah, or Alex Haley. And he's, I think, one of the first people I was very happy to say, oh, you know what, he's Muslim, when I was younger.
Yeah, and his life is one of complete change. And he kind of, you know, he basically ignored everything he did before and he said, look, that was completely wrong. And he put his hand up, and he was courageous enough to say that I was wrong. You know, very few people in public life do that. And can I just weave something in, which is, there's actually a rule that of Shams of Tabriz about change, which I thought was very relevant to Malcolm X. Could I read that out, Annabelle? Mm. Okay, so this is going back to the first book I mentioned, but it's about change. And Shams of Tabriz says, try not to resist the changes which come your way. Instead, let life live through you. And do not worry that your life is turning upside down. How do you know that the side you are used to is better than the one to come? And that just personifies Malcolm X's situation.
Yeah.
You know?
And by the way, for those of you who haven't read that book, Alex Haley is a journalist. He's written for a lot of magazines and a lot of newspapers. And the way the book is written is filled with information, but also it's written like a book. So it's like you're reading a very well-written article in a book form.
So you said this was an autobiography. Is it a biography written by Alex Haley, or is it an autobiography with bits written by Alex Haley as well?
So
how does it work?
So there were a series of interviews that Alex Haley did with Malcolm, and they sat down, they just went through. So it's Malcolm's words, but it's written by Alex. And the book was completed after Malcolm died as well. So, you know, it came out a couple of months afterwards. And it's been on the sort of the Time sort of shortlist of nonfiction that, you know, everyone should read, you know, basically.
Rehan, I am astounded at your selection so far. They've been absolutely amazing. I cannot wait for book number 3.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So what's the third book that you've got with you, Rehan?
Well, if I was on a desert island, and I was by myself, the one thing I would need would be courage. And I'd need to have a sense of valor to get me through those cold nights on a desert island. So I chose a book by probably, I would say, the greatest fantasy writer since Tolkien.
Oh, wow.
High praise.
Yeah, right.
And he's alive today as well, guys. So I have chosen The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. And Brandon's been to the festival, and Annabelle very kindly put me in touch with him 2 years ago while I moderated this session. Lovely, lovely man. Really nice guy. Now, the key thing with a fantasy novel is, like with any other novel, but particularly with fantasy, there are three tools that the writer has to work with. Has to work with the setting, the characters, and the plot. It's particularly important with fantasy. So Brandon sets up in The Way of Kings, the setting is kind of this land of Roshar, where there are these violent storms that take place, and all the magical energy comes from the violent storms. Okay, so people try and capture the energy when these storms are happening. The backstory is that there are these Knights Radiant who fought off something called the Desolation, where everything was totally destroyed by the Voidbringers, but the Knights Radiant disappeared and they left their weapons on Roshar. Thousands of years later, 5,000 years later, some of the swords and shards and the weapons of the Knights are still there. The Voidbringers are returning. The Desolation is returning. There are no Knights left. Okay. There are only warring there are only warring kingdoms now. And so you've got, you know, that's kind of the setting, the backstory. Okay, and then what Brandon Sanderson does, is that he sets up these really intensely personal characters, four or five characters, very different. Maybe if I can just mention two of them. One is Kaladin, who was training as a surgeon, is thrust into a war, becomes a slave, and then he goes through this incredible transformation as he realizes he has these kind of powers that enable him to harness the energy from the storms, okay, and make him into something completely different. One of the other characters who I really, really liked was called Dalinar, and Dalinar is a prince who's a brother of the king. The king dies, and Dalinar has a history of being a warmonger, but now he realizes and he starts to see these visions that the only way for the people of Roshar to defeat the Voidbringers, to defeat this desolation, is to unite. And they have to unite rather than to separate. So Dalinar's story is about trying to unite. Now, one of the challenges he faces is that he's seen as a warmonger, but now he's realizing he has to take a softer approach towards people, because people will only listen if you reach out to them. But his softness of approach is now being seen as others, as weakness. He's becoming weak. And this actually reminds me, if I may, Annabelle, to quote another rule of Shams of Tabriz, because I just thought it was so relevant, which is from the 40 Rules of Love, which is, it says that if you want to strengthen your faith, you will need to soften inside. For your faith to be rock solid, your heart needs to be as soft as a feather. So that's what Dalinar needs to do, but the people are not uniting. And then you have a number of other characters. That's kind of the basic setup. And I know you've, Martin, you've read it as well.
Yeah, I've read a couple of chapters, the first couple of chapters. I've sort of been saving it. It's on my reading list. But I wanted to ask you, actually, is that a lot of high fantasy, a lot of people get a bit intimidated because once they start reading it, they feel very overwhelmed with the world and the rules and the magic and the characters with the different names. And so I'm wanting to know from you, since you've read the book and obviously you're a huge fan, whether it's that type of book where you have to really be into fantasy to read, or whether anyone who maybe it's a good introduction into the fantasy world, or if it's too overwhelming.
I would say if you haven't read Brandon Sanderson, start with his other series called Mistborn. Okay, Mistborn is really excellent, and I think it's a better introduction because, yes, this book is encyclopedic. You need to take a week off work to finish it. There's so much in here. He's so prolific, and this is just the book I'm holding, which is about 1,200 pages, is the first one. Then there's the second one, there's a third one, and the fourth one's just come out, which I'm reading through at the moment. Okay, and then he's got a couple more coming as well.
Would you say it's along the same lines of a Game of Thrones type thing where the world just seems never ending and there's a lot of different characters and they all kind of interconnect?
Game of Thrones is fantasy. I think the difference is that I think, you know, when I've read Game of Thrones, I haven't watched the series. I've read it.
You haven't watched the series?
What? No, but do you know what? Even when I was reading the book, I was flicking through a lot of it. because what I found was that I didn't want to read about the grotesque violence and the violence against women and some of the way, you know, the characters were portrayed. I didn't want to read that because I thought if I'm reading this, this is going to desensitize me in the real world. And research, there's so much research about this. You watch violent stuff, you know, hear violent things, you become desensitized to violence and you have no compassion left in your heart. Okay, so what Brandon does, he doesn't show you that, right? It's there, it's in the background, but he doesn't go into
that. It's implied.
Yeah, it's implied. And I think there's a huge market out there for people who want to read this kind of fantasy rather than who want to read that type of fantasy. Now, of course, I'm not going to criticize anyone who reads Game of Thrones. Yeah. I've read it myself. It's fine. You want to read it, you read it. But there is a huge market for this kind of stuff as well. So I just think it's something which is more uplifting.
Yeah. And I think as well with The Way of Kings is that it's much more plot-driven in the sense that with Game of Thrones, and actually a lot of fantasy novels that are quite epic, there's so much detail. You could read about someone's eye color for a paragraph. Whereas I think with The Way of Kings, it's a lot quicker than that. You're not stuck on those sort of visual aesthetic details as much.
It's not world-building at the expense of everything else.
Yeah.
It moves the story forward.
Yeah.
And what a lot of fantasy writers do, they'd say, hey, it's a great idea. I want to share it with you for the next 50 pages. And you're like, I don't want to read that.
Yeah.
Where this actually moves the plot forward.
Yeah.
One thing I would like to remind everybody is that, yes, you are listening to Talking of Books on Dubai Eye 103.8. My name's Annabelle, talking to Man Jalal, who's my lovely co-host today, and Rehan Khan, who's talking about the three books that he would take to a desert island. And the one that we're talking about at the moment is The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. We've talked a lot about Brandon Sanderson. We've said some really lovely things about him. But I think that we really need... You've had the wonderful opportunity of seeing him at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature and having a chat with him. But I don't think our listeners have. They may not have had the opportunity to see him at the festival. So here he is talking about how he became a writer and how long it took before he thought he actually got good.
I look back and say, what grabbed me? What was it? And I think it's partially the imagination, the sense of wonder. We, as people, like to go do this. We want to see new things. There's adventurous, exploratory sense inside of us. And fantasy books are about that, taking us to places that we haven't been, that we can't go. But our imaginations can. These books that I'd started writing, you know, after the first six, the first five I thought, you know, were just practice. But books six through about nine, I really put a lot into those. I felt I was getting really good as a writer. I felt I knew what I was doing, and I felt I was writing really good books. I was getting stacks and stacks of rejections. And people were telling me, why don't you be more like this writer over here? Why don't you be more like this writer over here? Your novels are too big. They're too long. We can't buy things that are this long. Write them shorter. And I had to make the decision that at the end of my life, if I had 100 unpublished novels in the closet, would I be okay with that? Would I be okay with never selling anything? I decided I was going to write, you know, the biggest, baddest, most awesome book that I could. I was going to ignore everything that people were telling me. At that time, really popular in fantasy was kind of very gritty and dark fantasy. And I said, no, I'm not. That's not what I want to write. I'm going to write heroic fantasy, you know, stories like I want to read. By coincidence, it was a few months after I finished that book, I hadn't sent it anywhere, that someone called me wanting to buy Elantris, the sixth book that I'd written, that I'd really had felt would be the book that broke me out all those years ago. It was kind of a, I don't know, a fulfillment for me, that I was doing the right thing, but it was also this great moment where I realized, hey, people do want to read those things that I was doing. I'm glad I had the crisis and came out of it before I sold the book. I'm glad that I was able to make the decision that this is what I wanted to do and commit myself to writing, even if I never sold anything. And then it was perfectly all right and awesome for me to get a really nice book deal with a big New York publisher and become a bestseller. I'm perfectly okay with that now that it's happened.
That was Brandon Sanderson talking about his journey as a fantasy writer. He's the author of one of Rehan Khan, who is our castaway guest. He is the author of one of the books that he's taken to his desert island today. I love Brandon Sanderson. It's impossible not to like the guy. And he goes back to exactly what you were saying. You know, a lot at the time that he was writing, a lot of people were saying, oh, we want more of this gritty kind of writing, this dark stuff. And he's like, no, I'm going to stick to what I want, which is heroic fantasy. And that's what you'd class The Way of Kings as, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly how I... Because that's what I would need on a desert island. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be scared by a shadow, right? I want heroic fantasy, which instills valor.
valor and courage. Valor isn't a word that we use enough.
No, we don't.
Thank you for bringing it to Talking of Books today. Just want to remind everybody that if it isn't a fantasy book, it is a science fiction book. But if you'd like to win a copy of Artemis by Andy Weir, who is coming to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature next year, do stay tuned because I have a great competition coming up for you next. Thank you so much, Rehan. Remind us of the books that you brought to your desert island today.
Yes, there was The 40 Rules of Love by Elif Shafak. Then there was the autobiography of Malcolm X with Alex Haley. And finally, there was The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson.
And on that note, we release you from your imprisonment on the desert island. Although it was probably quite nice. You had a few drinks of coconut on the beach. You had a bit of a relaxing time. A good read. We weren't that mean to you today, I have to say.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.